Taking a look now at Wisconsin's trout waters with Todd Hansen of Madison, Wisconsin. He's the editor of Wisconsin Trout. It's the statewide quarterly newsletter for Wisconsin for Trout Unlimited, and really pleased to have him with us today because he's also the author of the book Map Guide to Improved Trout Waters of Wisconsin, published by Where My Publications. I'm really pleased to have him along today to talk with us about trout and trout streams and the trout stamp, and certainly take your questions. And tell you what, the questions can relate to actual fishing. How do we catch those trout, or talk about stream management? What that actually has meant a lot, not only for people who fish for trout, but for a lot of other people as well. The improvements that have come about in our trout waters because, in large part, because of the trout stamp, I think, and also obviously some very dedicated individuals. But we'll talk with him and take your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Todd Hansen, welcome.
Thank you, Larry.
Nice to have you with us today. Now, your book, Improved Trout Waters of Wisconsin, I had a chance to look at it, and it's a really interesting book. What possessed you to come up with it? Give us the background on this.
The idea for the book came about from looking at lots of trout stamp project descriptions that the DNR puts out and that we report in our Trout Unlimited newspaper, but that never really get described in the kind of detail that helps a fisherman. You'll have a trout stamp report that comes out every 2 years from the DNR, and it will say, here's what we did, so many feet, it maybe cost this much money, and it was done on this river, and then they stop. You know?
Where?
Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff that fishermen want. So now if somebody came out with a book like this, maybe let's say 25 years ago, I think a lot of people might be rightly concerned that it's directing people to a small number of improved sites. I think that'd be a fair criticism, but heck, we've had this trout stamp program for 30 years now.
Yeah.
And we're up to having improved, you know, close to 800 miles of trout stream. I don't know about you, but I can't fish that the rest of my life. So, you know, it seemed a good time to try to collect this information. And it's getting harder to collect because some of this work, you know, was done 50 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got your book's over 100 pages, and on each page is often more than one map showing a section of the stream, of the river or the stream, and talk a little bit more about how the book is organized.
The book is organized alphabetically. Find a name of a stream that comes to mind, like Black Earth Creek, go to the Bees, and there's a map for it. And sometimes there are three or four trout streams on a given map. Take Black Earth Creek, for example. You go to B and you'll find Black Earth Creek, but if you went to G for Garfoot Creek, you won't find an entry. And if you go to another stream that runs into Black Earth, I'm drawing a blank at right now, but you won't find an entry there either. All three of those streams are under Black Earth Creek, so you have to know a little bit about where to find something, or check the index where Garfoot, you know, would show up, and that would tell you where to go.
And then it tells you within the book, it shows the exact areas where the trout stamp dollars went to improve the stream habitat, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. You've got the book is in five colors, actually, two blues, a red, a green, and black. And because of that, we can show trout streams as very dark blue for class one, medium blue for class two, and we have a class three in Wisconsin, and those are in light blue. And red brackets then, a beginning bracket, an end bracket, and a letter designating a project site, you know, mark off where the improvement work took place. And then some of these streams, like Black Earth, is another a good example of it just filled with these red marks because, you know, it's been worked on and loved for many years. So it's had a lot of DNR purchases on it and private easements that groups like Trout Unlimited and conservation clubs have obtained. And once they get an easement, they can invite somebody in like the DNR to do a stream improvement project on that site.
And it also shows the other very critical thing that I think it shows is where public access.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people will buy the book as much for that as for the spots.
Yeah.
Because sometimes these aren't very well marked out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to know where those are. And the book shows, for example, DNR-owned land as a darker shade of green, mm-hmm. county-owned land as a lighter green.
Mm-hmm.
And then we gave stream easements the color red because easements sometimes, you know, often run right along a stream, and it would be very hard to tell green from blue. So having that little red border around the stream tells you, okay, I can get out of the stream, as opposed to current state law, which pretty much says if you don't know or if it's private land, your rights allow you to walk in the stream, but then you can get out of the stream only to go around an obstruction. If you come across a big down tree that you can't get around, get out of the stream and walk around. Or if you come to deep water that you can't wade through, the law says you can. That's an obstruction too, and you can get out briefly, go around it, and then get back into the water.
Well, every line's filled, so let's go to Fentan in Milwaukee. Hello, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. It's a delight to hear how all of these wonderful improvements are occurring. I wanted to ask your guest would comment upon a viral hemorrhagic septicemia disease and you know, whether
sure.
If he sees any threat there and how to deal with it.
Sure. And and we'll talk about it in relationship to our trout and our trout streams. Todd, what do you know about VHS in terms of its potential impact on our trout streams?
Very good question, and I think we are encouraged that it will not have too much of an effect on trout streams, and here's why. We did a story on this about 6 months ago when the VHS virus was first discovered in Lake Michigan and then in the Winnebago system, and talked with a gentleman by the name of Matt Mitro. He's a DNR trout researcher. I think he's their only official trout researcher with that title here in Madison. And we talked about that and did a story on it. And you might think about a trout stream, how it originates. You know, they don't really lend themselves toward a virus being built up because a lot of these streams they originate in springs. So here is groundwater that has fallen on the land, gone in fissures or sunk into the ground, gets into the aquifer, and then months or sometimes years later, it bubbles out of a spring and feeds the stream. So it's kind of like always new water,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, let's say, Lake Winnebago or Lake Michigan, which take years and years and years to change over, to change that water. So for inland trout, it's probably quite unlikely that VHS will affect trout from that standpoint. And then secondly, some of the trout species are not too terribly much affected by it. Some are, but mm-hmm. I think the brown and brook trout that are in our streams predominantly, as opposed to rainbow trout, are not too susceptible to VHS.
So that's the good news. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Tim in Madison has a comment or question. Tim, hello.
Hello. I'm sitting in my trout waders right now. I just got done. I just got off the stream. I was out there the last couple of days. And if you want a field report, I got it for you. I was worried about what the flooding did to the trout stream, but my report is it did a great job. It uncovered all these gravel bars, rocks are exposed. It did a great job to the trout streams.
So you had a little luck this morning.
Well, actually, not this morning. There was too much runoff. Those streams are pretty cloudy. But yesterday, I must have caught 30, 40 fish. Some nice ones. The water was beautiful.
Well, thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. Appreciate that call. And, you know, Tim's talking 30, 40 trout here. And obviously, this is a catch-and-release situation that we're talking about, Todd.
Yes, until the opener in May. It's catch and release, artificial lures only, spinners or flies, and barbless too. Pinch down the barb if your flies or lures aren't barbless. He mentioned the effects of the floods. Boy, we all remember that from last year.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the streams in areas like in the Coulee country to the west of us, a couple counties, really just got hammered with that. That's where all that flooding was. And the general opinion is that it did do a nice flushing. You know, trout streams will accumulate silt and sand. And, boy, you get these big flood events, and they wash that away.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably going to have some real good natural reproduction in the next few years because of that, too, because trout spawn in gravel. And if that gets covered up by sand or silt, you know, there's just one fewer spot for spawning to take place or to be viable.
Yeah. Thanks, Tim.
No problem.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Holly in Elm Grove is up next. Hi, Holly.
Good morning. Hi, guys.
Morning.
I've got a trout stream on my property up in Shawano County, and it's in 1973, was a Class A trout stream, mostly little brookies, and it starts behind the cabin, opens up into a spring pond, narrows down again, and eventually flows into the Red River. Unfortunately, the beavers dropped by, and now we've got muck and marl on top of 12 feet of it on top of hard sand in that pond, and an awful lot of it in the rest of the stream. And I would love to restore this stream, but I don't even know how to start, and I don't know who to talk to, and I don't know how to pay for it.
Yeah.
Well, I could suggest, if you're in the Shawano area, there is a TU chapter by the name of Shawpacka. It obviously covers Shawano and Waupaca counties. And the chapter president up there is a gentleman by the name of Dave Ehrenberg, Ehrenberg. I'm sure he won't mind me mentioning his name.
No.
He'd be a good person to call. I would guess he's in the phone book. I'm not sure which city he lives in. But your first task is going to be to have to get rid of the beavers, and there are trappers around. The DNR also traps using money from the trout stamp program. We do a lot more traditional stream improvement with structures and rocks and logs down here in the south. But when you get up north, it's more important to keep beaver under control on the stream than it is to, that does more for a stream than going in there and, you know, building some bank covers. They really slow the water down, and that means it warms up, and warm water is not where trout want to be. So that would be a first step. In terms of the beaver, you might just give your DNR fish manager in your area a call, too, because they need to know where beaver move in so that they can do something about that.
And if you go online to Wisconsin Trout Unlimited, you can probably find the number of the I just went online myself, and the chapters are all listed under Wisconsin Trout Unlimited, and the phone numbers of the people in the various areas that you can connect with. And so that's probably a pretty good idea, Holly.
Excellent. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Well, that's would be a spot for some of that trout stamp money.
Yeah, it could be. I know the Red River is maybe a Class 3 water. It's got pretty warm water. The Red River, for people that don't know where it is, I believe runs partly through the Menominee Indian Reservation, but it certainly runs south of it. So that would be one of the, what our caller's stream is, it would be one of the cold water feeders to that stream, and is probably helping keep the Red River a trout stream in the first place, because if it's Class 3, it probably has some water that warms up quite a bit in the summer, and you know, it can be marginal water.
How does the before we go back to the phones and Dave and Shatek coming up here? Actually, what I should remind everybody is Todd Hansen is our guest today. He is the editor of Wisconsin Trout, the quarterly newsletter for Wisconsin Trout Unlimited across the state, and he has written the book Map Guide to Improved Trout Waters of Wisconsin: Exact Locations of Trout Stamp, Trout Unlimited County and other habitat projects, with full color maps showing public lands and easements. He's our guest here. Jim Packard, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Wisconsin Trout Waters with Todd Hansen, author of Improved Trout Waters of Wisconsin. It's published by Where Am I Publications. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's turn to Dave and Shatek next. Dave, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. The stream that I'm going to be talking about is in Adams County. It's called Big Spring Creek. It's near the little town of Big Spring. A number of years ago, Perrier wanted to
Take water from it.
Exactly, from the right next to the stream. And I was wondering, whatever happened to that? To Perrier, did they get the go-ahead to go and do that or whatever?
Yeah, we know about Todd knows about that. Todd,
It wasn't maybe the spring itself was called Big Spring, but it was at the headwaters of the McCann River.
Okay.
And Perrier basically got chased out of the state. They got chased out of the state. They went over to Michigan and built their bottling plant.
Okay. Okay. I do know that the Big Spring Creek used to be a real nice trout stream with browns and brooks in there, but the water dropped down so low that I don't even know if it's classified as a trout stream anymore. But
you know, that's
a history about that. Owen Grammy used to fish that. Years ago, wildlife painter. So
yeah.
Thanks,
Dave.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. Talking with Todd Hanson about our Wisconsin trout waters and, of course, trout and trout fishing. And certainly give us a call with your questions or email us too at talk@wpr.org. You know, one of the kind of great things about this, the trout stamp dollars, and virtually all of the money, if I'm not mistaken, that is raised from the sale of trout stamps goes to improve habitat. Is that correct?
That's true. Some money is spent for administrative purposes, producing the trout stamp report, and some money is also spent these days on some fish surveys, stream shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And some is spent, as we were talking earlier, on beaver control up north.
Yeah. But that's helping improve the trout streams.
Yes. Yes, it is. Now, the trout stamp started out as at 2.25 back in 78 when we first started purchasing these. Now it's up to $10. So you take 130,000 trout fishers times $10 a piece. That's a chunk of change to spend.
That's a good amount of money. And I guess one of the things I wanted to mention was – let's say you're interested in something like frogs. A trout stamp isn't a bad thing to buy if you're interested in improving the life of frogs.
You know something that I don't? No, actually, you're right. Some interesting things are happening these days with these stream improvement projects. Some of them are being done with some federal money through, let's say, like a program like WHIP, W-H-I-P, Wildlife Habitat Improvement Program. And that's federal USDA money. And they are, improving a stream for multiple purposes. So it will not only have its banks improved and maybe some structures put into it to deepen the water and narrow the channel and keep the river from meandering too terribly far for trout, but they're building in habitat for frogs and other animals too, and I think that's pretty cool. So there was even a study group that has formed to talk about doing some more of this for frogs in particular. But if anybody out there knows of plants even or other animals that depend on, in particular, on cold water ecosystems, you'd be encouraged to bring your concerns to some of these folks because they've got the money to get in there with heavy equipment and do something that you don't have, maybe for your pet animal or plant. But, they're more than willing to work with those groups to see if they can, while they're doing all this other work some wonders for some other species as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Jane in Genesee is online next. Jane, hi.
How you doing?
Good.
The question is going to be about a Scuppernong Creek in Waukesha County. And I live near a tributary that feeds in a little small creek. And I wanted to know how far will trout come up a creek? Like this particular one may be a couple feet wide, sandy bottom throughout the whole year, maybe, you know, a foot deep, you know, and cold. And I'm not quite sure when I looked at maps, is maybe about a mile away that the lines stop, you know, for trout migration.
Well, the line that demarks the official trout stream has to end somewhere, and I usually stop it when it starts to get into that little trickle because it's not really fishable. But hey, as long as there's no 3-foot waterfall or something like that on the stream, they will go right up to the very headwaters of those little trickles like yours to do their spawning.
But how deep would the water have to be for spawning, or how wide would the pools, or, you know, what would be a spot in the creek where the trout say, okay, this is the spot I'm going to stop at?
It might be more dependent on what the bottom looks like. If you had a stream that's literally a foot wide and it had a nice little stretch of gravel, that's spawning territory.
Okay, gravel versus sand.
Yes.
Okay. That's great. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Robert in McFarland is up next. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a little bit fearful of somebody that claims that 800 miles of stream had been improved, so I think you're using that term very loosely. And this does not involve direct projects and improvement. You just decided that if you improved something at one end, then it must have been improved everything between that and the next place improved it. So very loosely used. I think you're not looking at the impact that you cause on the natural in quote, natural resource that we have here. When people tramp up and down a stream, tramp up and down the banks with erosion, what you're claiming you have easements on people's private property for any excuse, you might as well say. If you're going to say there's an obstacle or a little deep water, I guess you can find someplace else to fish. I wouldn't want you tramping on my land, running down the banks. And I would like to keep things natural, and I would like to keep things the way they are, and in as much as you can with a beaver. And for the person with a beaver, you open up that dam, you keep it open. That's really how you... If you can't keep up with a beaver and you're a human being, I guess maybe you should find another state to live in. It's not that difficult, and you sure don't need to call a government agency that usually doesn't respond very well in the first place and wait for them to come out and charge you or charge the taxpayers to come and babysit your property for you.
Whoa. All right. Robert's got some strong thoughts here. How do you respond?
Well, I don't know. I think he said what he wanted to say.
Well, let's take up the issue, though, of the 800 miles of trout stream. As I'm looking at the maps in your book, what I'm seeing is a starting and an ending spot on those streams. And so I assume that's what we're seeing here is where a project started and where it ended. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. And, of course, there are many more miles of stream that haven't been improved. Sometimes people, I use the word improvement. Some people like the term restoration. What these folks try to do is stabilize a bank. In some areas where banks are, I mean, if you fish like the Coulee area, you've maybe fished in a, you know, place where there's a sand or clay bank, you know, mm-hmm. twice as high as you are. Mm-hmm. And every big rain event, it wants to wash out and, you know, so rock are sometimes used to stabilize those and in some cases cut them down. I mean, if a project has a lot of money to spend, and I mean, let's say some of the projects we're seeing these days are big partnerships, are the DNR, and there's some federal money and a half dozen local sports clubs and Trout Unlimited and a city, you know, they're coming up with like $150,000 for a project. So they can get into some area that has like some of these eroding banks and take earth movers and slope those banks so that when you do have a flood, it's important to get the water out of the stream and into a floodplain so its energy can dissipate a little bit. When we had the big floods in the western part of the state, the areas of streams that had the most damage were the headwaters, where water comes down and it's funneled and it's moving fast.
Yeah.
But once it gets down into the valleys a little bit and can get out of the bank,
okay.
Right, then its energy dissipates a little bit and it doesn't tear things up so much.
So, and in terms of, all right, so there's that planning or that leveling out, perhaps, that happens on some occasions. But in most occasions, what you're trying to do is provide some grass or natural plant material along a stream bank that may have been under some duress, be it from, I don't know what from, but really to stop the erosion from going into the stream.
And these techniques vary, too, by where you are in the state, the type of structures, you know, sand, gravel, muck that you're going through, the gradient of the stream.
Mm-hmm.
Certain techniques are not usable if you've got a high gradient stream. I used to live in the central part of the state, and improvements are going on like the Tomorrow River around Nelsonville, north of Amherst, that area. And they do a technique over there called brush bundling. Now, the stream over many years may have widened out, and let's say you might have a section of a stream up there that doesn't move too fast, but mm-hmm. it's maybe 20 feet wide. And 20 feet wide and 6 inches deep is not good for trout.
Oh.
And what they'll do is they'll stake Christmas trees or brush that they cut along the side of the stream to the inside bend of the stream, stake it down so it's not going to move with stakes and twine. Now the next few times you get a rain event, some silt is coming down the river, and silt likes to accumulate on the inside bends. It goes into where that brush or those trees were staked. And then over a course of a few years, that becomes a sandbar.
Mm-hmm.
Grasses start to grow, natural grasses. And there you go. Now you've narrowed the stream. Instead of 20 feet wide, that area might be now 10 feet wide. And
the water picks up speed.
2 feet deep, water, faster water. Is colder water generally, so that's good for the trout.
I wanted to mention one other thing that Robert brought up, and that relates to the beavers. I don't think, and I'm not sure on this, maybe you can help me out on this. Obviously, if you're on a trout stream, but the beavers are on some other property or on public property, you don't have the right to go and blow up a beaver dam or clear out a beaver dam.
I don't think you do. Somebody might kick at one with their boots or something.
I think there is a procedure that one might have to go through in order to be able to actually remove a beaver dam that is obviously one's not on your property. You can't remove it without some permission either from the owner or from the DNR from another agency, is be my guess.
Well, the beaver dam gets anchored on both sides, and that would be on the bank, and the bank belongs to somebody.
Yeah.
So you're right. But the DNR would have some more details about how to go about that.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Aaron in Green Bay next. Aaron, hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
Question for you. I'm not much of a trout fisherman myself, stream fisherman, I should say. However, I do occasionally get out onto Lake Michigan and try to go for the rainbow trout, the brown trout, and the salmon that's on Lake Michigan. But my question is more in regards to, I recently read an article that said the coastal brook trout are in danger of being put on the endangered species list. I was wondering if any of the work that he had written his articles on had necessarily done work to perhaps prevent them from going on the endangered species list, or perhaps some of the work already being done would improve the populations of the brook trout on Lake Michigan. And I'll hang up and listen then. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
There aren't any projects along Lake Michigan that deal with coaster brook trout. I think the gentleman was referring to not coastal, but coaster.
Coaster brook trout.
There are some I don't know that they I don't think there are any in Lake Michigan, but there are some in Lake Superior, and there are some projects going on in the Canada portion of Lake Superior, and also along Lake Superior's north shore, like Whittlesey Creek. There have been some habitat projects there where they're trying to bring in some of the trying to recreate a situation of a stream, from before logging days, where you would have large woody debris that just goes back and forth over the stream. It makes it terribly unfishable, but it creates habitat for those fish. The coasters are trout that were nearly fished out because they seemed to be so easy to catch and they were so prized. They were big trout that live in Lake Superior but go into these streams to spawn, and then the fish go back into Lake Superior. We often think of that as something that happens with salmon, but here that happens with those big brook trout, too.
Interesting. Thanks, Aaron. Dan in Liberty Pole, I think, is next. Dan, hi.
Yeah, I'm calling from the Cooley area with all our many very good trout streams. And just mention, I used to work for your organization as an outreach educator to the Amish. But I hate to be the purveyor of bad news, but we have a major threat to the quality of our trout streams out this way, and it comes from Dairyland Power. They're adding scrubbers to their plant in Genoa, and the ash from those scrubbers contains a lot of highly toxic materials, basically stuff that used to go in the air, and they want to landfill it, and it has the potential to leach these heavy metals, mercury, even some degree of radiation, into our all spring-fed trout streams. And I hope people become aware of this. And there's a lot of power plants around the country and the world, for that matter, that are going to be putting scrubbers on. And the people don't realize how toxic this ash is. And we have to do some research to find a better way of dealing with it rather than just burying it in a landfill where the potential for leaching out into our, you know, often our drinking water is there.
Thanks for bringing that up, Dan. Todd, do you want to comment on that?
That's a very good point. And I think it also points up the fact that, you know, there's more than one way to take care of a trout stream, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Be concerned about things like this as well.
Absolutely. So it's something to keep on the agenda for sure. Dan, thanks again. Dave in DeSoto, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hello there, Larry, and hello, Todd. I live on the very upper reaches of a spring-fed trout stream in the same area that your last caller was in, and I'm with him 100%. When I first bought out here, my stream had brookies in it. The brookies were eventually replaced by browns, and there's nothing wrong with that, but my frogs have disappeared. My snakes have disappeared. I'm wondering whether it's a warm water and cold water problem, as I believe brookies would live in a colder water, and Is it something to do with people that are chopping down all the trees and brush along the stream and letting the sunshine in, and the waters are uninhabitable anymore? I'd also like to say that I think that beavers are part of the natural ecosystem. I've fished in many beaver ponds around here. I have fished for this country from Washington to Maine. Some of the biggest trout I've caught were out of beaver ponds. The warm and cold water, would that be an upstream type of thing? Do I have a blockage downstream? But my brown trout, I could walk up my little section of stream and see 20 fish. And nowadays, I had the DNR, your guys, that your biologists come by with their shocking little wand, and they ran it up the stream. They found two trout where I used to be able to see easily 20. And I'm saying 10% is not enough. I have no frogs, no snakes. Is it a runoff problem from my... there's a lot of agriculture around here. I can't imagine that changing over the past 20 years. The farmers are doing the same thing they've always done. Do I have blockage downstream that's not letting my fish come up, or do I have warmer water coming upstream? You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Yes. Boy, it's really hard to say, but in general, if the brook trout have moved out and brown trout have moved in, I would think that that's a good indication that the water temperature has increased for some reason, and I don't know why. If there are some beaver, you know, beaver dams do make for great fishing. Trouble is, it's only for a short period of time, and then those because they back up water where there are already trout, and then pretty soon the water warms up and the trout don't like that. So it's it can be a two-edged sword for fishing. Beaver dams are great early on, but then they become a kind of a habitat mm-hmm. problem.
And in terms of Dave here trying to figure out what's going on with his with the stream or with the area, you know, does Trout Unlimited do sort of on-site evaluation? Is it a DNR thing? Is it part of it? Probably is just an individual type of thing of surveying your own part of the property and finding out what other property owners down the stream, what they're doing or what they have.
That'd be one way to go about it. I know some of our TU chapters just pretty recently, like in the last 4 or 5 years, have been getting involved in what's called citizen monitoring. Some listeners have heard of programs like the WAVE Water Action Volunteers program. There's a gal by the name of Chris Stepanek with the DNR who works with that. But the DNR is open more lately to training private individuals so that they can kind of like adopt a highway program, adopt a stream and set up a testing regimen for it and test for oxygen after rain events and test for different pH and other things. And instead of that being, well, the DNR used to say, well, thanks very much, but sorry, we can't use your data because, you're not with the DNR and we don't know how well you've been trained. Mm-hmm. They're doing the training now up for these individuals so that they can take advantage of all these people who would like to do that
to
testing.
Help.
So maybe this gentleman here could contact a Trout Unlimited chapter. You might, find some people who are involved in that and they could set something up where they might help in monitoring.
And Trout Unlimited, probably just in the DeSoto area, I'm not sure right off the top of my head which chapter that would be. But you can go online to the Wisconsin Trout Unlimited, and there's a map showing where all the different chapters are located. And then underneath the map is a whole list of names and phone numbers, and that would probably be the way to follow up on that, Dave, I think anyway. And in terms of finding out these – and there really are 800 miles of improved trout stream as a result of the trout stamp, right?
Yeah, pretty close to it. And then thousands and thousands of miles of trout water, of course.
Yeah, thousands and thousands of miles. But the 800 or so miles of improved trout waters of Wisconsin, the exact locations of those waters, that's comes from trout stamp monies, from Trout Unlimited, from the county and other habitat projects, are all there in Todd's book. It's called Map Guide to Improve Trout Waters of Wisconsin. How do we get copies of that, by the way?
You can, the book's being sold at some retail outlets, a lot of sporting goods stores like Tight Lines and DePere, Fly Fishers in Milwaukee, plug time, right? Mm-hmm. Fontana in Madison, Driftless Angler in Viroqua, and at a few places out of state like Bob Mitchell's Fly Shop in Lake Elmo, Minnesota, Bentley's in Bloomington, Minnesota, and Chicago Fly Fishing Outfitters. We're trying to get it in some other places, but people can also then go to the website, and there's information there.
And the website is?
Whereamipubs.com.
Whereamipubs.com. And you can order it probably right off the website, too.
Yeah, yes.
Todd, a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
This was fun. Thanks, Larry.
Todd Hanson of Madison, editor of Wisconsin Trout. It's the statewide quarterly newsletter for Wisconsin Trout Unlimited. He's also the author of the book, Improved Trout Waters of Wisconsin. And go to your local bookstore. They'll be able to find copies of that for you as well. They can order one for you, if nothing else. Pleased to have him with us today. And well, I'm sure we'll talk again about Wisconsin Trout Waters. Coming up, though, we're going to be talking about community-supported agriculture with a couple of guests. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.